every time you get triggered, but you don't have a way of resolving it, your child's going to feel that. And so when I hear about a lot of conflict in families and people don't understand what's going on or how to deal with it, and it doesn't seem to make sense, and of course the children are going to feel that.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
So welcome, 18 Summers Family Tribe. We are here today with a mutual friend of our good friend,
Tim Story,
who we're all fans of and you, our whole community, knows well. This is Amy Van Slambrook. Amy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
It's so glad to be here.
It's great. And I think timing always works out well. And Amy, just so our tribe knows, has a specialized in generational trauma, which is something I'm excited about to hear, not only for our own family's needs, but I know a lot of you that have talked to us about different things out there. A master's in clinical mental health counseling. She specializes in experience and training in addressing the emotional health of women, relationships, and recovering from trauma. And that is something that we have not come across in such a clear way, but it's something that our family has come across in different realms, as we were talking before this started, and others. And I just think it's such a needed thing and something that's just so not understood. So I'm going to let Jamie pretty much be the lead on this today, because she has been so excited, Amy, to talk to you.
Every day I'm like, oh, and she did this, and oh, I'm thinking about that. I've been really excited because,
Welcome.
Thank you for being here. And thank you to Tim for connecting us. I think that, you know, it's interesting that so many people don't think about how they get to a certain place. So we end up, we might have triggers. For example, you know, Jim travels a lot, and I used to, every time he would travel for work, I would have this, like, I couldn't even tell you what happened, because in my head, nothing was happening, but like, something was happening, and it was like a fear response, and my heart would pound out of my chest, and I, no matter what I said or did, it honestly felt like I was in fight or flight, and it tricked me, and it changed me, I knew that there had to be something more. And I feel like, you know, over time that's lessened, and we've gotten through that doing it enough. But I think that's one of so many things that came up to me when I was reading your work and learning more about you, and I thought, wow, how much of what we experience day to day is because of, like, exactly, you know, I mean, who knows where that even came from, but do you see that so much, that physical response elicited when sometimes we don't even know where it came from?
Absolutely. That is so perceptive of you, Jamie, because trauma is stored primarily in the body. There's a wonderful man named Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. He is a trauma expert, and he's written a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And it articulates what so many of us who've had trauma in our lives really don't have words for. In fact, the first place that trauma affects everybody who goes through it is in the language center. It cuts off the blood flow at the moment of trauma, so you don't have adequate words to express what you're feeling, what you're going through, the pain, wanting to get out of there. You just, your brain freezes, and often it will freeze for decades. You know, you are feeling the things, like you said, Jamie, but you don't have words for it. You just know that it's in there. So a lot of the way I describe it is that it's sort of like walking around with duct tape on your mouth. You know that you're experiencing something. You want to tell the person that you love or the person in your family, and you can't even begin to tell them. So a lot of times it comes out in feeling in fight or flight, feeling the anxiety, feeling totally numb and cut off, or on the opposite end of the spectrum, feeling rage that's feels inexplicable, you know, but you know that it's there and you know that it's real. And so I work a lot with helping people understand first how to connect your words to what you're experiencing and how to relearn that whole connection loop. And it also literally rebuilds the neural pathways in the brain so that you have language again. And that helps in a couple of course, because suddenly what felt really confusing you suddenly can talk to each other about, and you know when the other person is triggered, and you know what they need to hear, and you know how to help them in that moment.
That's so powerful.
And we're taking notes here.
I know. I was just about to tell you. I'm like,
you just gave me the pen.
I'm like, we have no pen.
I'm like, I'm paying attention too.
I love it.
And how do you think, you know, I always wonder, because I have these feelings and because I see these things, I know that he must also have these things, you know, that sure. There's a breakdown. So we, both of us have duct tape on our mouth. And so,
yes.
You know, and so how does that, you know, if you could talk for a moment about how that works person to person, and then even further, when we think of our children and, you know, they come out with these hellacious meltdowns or something that just needs to come out. You know, I think of a two-year-old and the way that literally their language is not as developed as their brain is. And so they, I mean, they actually do have a form of duct tape as well on them,
yes.
Because they can't take what they're thinking and feeling and bring it out. And sometimes that is from trauma as well. So I'm just wondering if you can help, you know, just all of that wisdom you just shared, put that, all of those players, right? So now we're talking about yourself, but then now we have spouses, we have children. How do all of those play together and that duct tape on your mouth?
Right. Well, exactly. And it's kind of a long process, you know, but there's a short way to help people in the interim, because a lot of what needs to happen is to go back into the memory and to really understand the voice of the inner child, which sounds a little bit, you know, woo-woo and esoteric, and do I have this little person walking around with me that I'm supposed to talk to? But it actually is incredibly healing, because when we experience those symptoms, or when you see your little one melting down and you don't understand what's going on, and if they've come from a traumatic background, like you're talking about, Jamie, you know, it is their way of trying to communicate. Since they can't get out the words, they're gonna use their body and their actions or their emotional responses. And so, you know, we go back into the memory, especially obviously with people who are a little older than a toddler, but we really go into that moment and we allow that child, if you will, to speak about what happened, what they were feeling, you know, everything, just allowing all those feelings to come up. We ask, when have you felt this way before? That's a really powerful question. Mm-hmm. If you don't pay attention to the immediate reaction, I say it's like a smoke screen, you know, that meltdown that somebody's having, even if it's your partner, that is a smoke screen. It's just a signal that, oh, there's something deeper going on if it's out of proportion for the moment. So when you are feeling anxious, when Jim would go out of town, the first reaction wouldn't be, why are you feeling anxious? You know, I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to come home. Right. I'm here for you. I'm not repeating what you experienced in other relationships. That seems like a logical way to help, right? Except for you, it's so much deeper. And so it's saying, you know, when have you felt this way before? And what were you feeling in that moment? Mm-hmm. What did you need then? And it can be as simple as, I just needed to know that you were promising to come back. Or I needed to know that I was loved and that I was valued, or even a hug. It can be very simple because it's a primitive sort of memory. And so every time that trigger comes up, what I help couples and families learn is to go through that process, and you can start to recognize when the other person is in a trigger. They'll get that look. And I know we all know that when our partners or spouses or children are having that look, like, this looks a little bit out of proportion. Mm. They're really having a tough time getting themselves out of it. And so you can just go through those series of questions. And of course, we've identified it already in a session, but it helps so much because suddenly you're stripping off the duct tape. Mm-hmm. You know, you are allowing that person to speak. The other thing that can help, Jamie and Jim, is doing some body work. If a child is going through a meltdown, one of the most amazing cases is when Dr. Vanderkolk really allows children to do what their body feels like it wants to do, because that's expressing some of the traumatic memory, you know, and they're trying to bring you into their experience of what they went through as a child, you know, or earlier in their life, or the disorder that they feel inside. It's just chaos. So they're going to show you that on the outside with their own behavior. And then you can just allow them and teach them how to soothe themselves, you know, saying, looks like you're really upset. You know, what can we do to help you calm down? This feeling isn't bigger than you, and it doesn't have to control you. Because what it brings up is often that the perpetrator obviously took control away. Whether that was directly or indirectly, a parent who abandons or abuses a child through neglect can be sort of introducing that in a covert way. It's different than any kind of physical abuse. It's the abandonment. Hopefully that makes some sense. So expressing it in the body, even yoga is amazingly healing. And having somebody do yoga every single day allows the body to process memories that it doesn't have words for. And the research is incredible for how healing that is.
It's funny you say that. I've noticed when I do yoga, I feel more relaxed. If not, I get bunched up. There's even been times where I've been doing it several times a week for years, and then I would stop for a year. And it just... But once you do it again, you're
like a traffic
jam. Why did I stop doing this?
Exactly.
So I'm currently back in flow of that, but it really does. Good. I've seen that result personally for me. Yeah. Ooh, both of us.
Wow. Yeah. For sure. I remember being super drawn to it as I was healing from various things. That's interesting. As we talked earlier, we do have, you know, two beautiful fosters in our home. And, you know, and they, so much of what, you know, your work is applicable to these children. And it was interesting that you say perpetrators, you know, it doesn't have to be a physical perpetration. I don't know. But just the thought, you know, I remembered when they came here and we said, well, you know, we were like, at least it wasn't physical. And I hate to use that at least it wasn't this, but they were not physically abused. They didn't arrive here from that type of an environment. And I remember in the moment of that first finding that news out and thinking it somehow having a relief. And I think that it was a misguided relief, because that's just not true. There's so many other layers that can be just as bad or worse. And what I'm wondering is what we saw happen with our little girl was that she would have days of doing big physical exploration. So this ties into the body work. And as soon as you said that, I'm like, oh, I'm wondering. So she, you know, had never, you know, wasn't used to playing in the ocean, wasn't used to jumping into a pool, that kind of stuff. And she went from being timid to the ocean to being in like big waves and kind of jumping over them, being timid of the pool, to jumping in the deep end and letting her face go under. And it seemed like on those days when she was doing this big, facing those types of fears, those would be the days that you have the most emotionally challenging days. Yes. So I'm wondering, do you see that? So like when you say with yoga or with other body work, do you see that you're doing the work? So I think to a layman like us, okay, so I'm doing yoga, I'm going to feel better, right? Do you sometimes do the physical work and it brings the stuff up so then it can go away? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure, 100%. And that makes sense. You know, for her, that might be as she's feeling more and more safe with you and knows she can trust you. One of the hardest things it is to do is to show anger with someone, or to show those unpleasant emotions that aren't necessarily very polite. Because first she's trying to establish, am I okay to be me here? Am I going to lose them if I have a certain emotion, whether it was a parent who just had a horrible reaction if she was crying? You know, that tells the child those emotions aren't allowed here. You can't express certain things, or you face abandonment, or you face me getting horribly angry with you. And so she's testing the boundaries now you know, what is safe for me to feel here? What is safe for me to show with this family? Are they going to leave me if I show big emotions, if I make big physical moves? You know, for her, it's analogous. That physical movement is analogous to an emotional expression too. But it does. It, if you're in the middle of a yoga practice and you're doing a certain move, lots of times a wave of grief will come over you that you have no idea where it came from. And you'll cry. It may not be very long, or it may be a long time, but you really have a deep emotional reaction to it because it's, again, letting those memories work themselves out. She may not understand why she feels the need to do that, but that may be the first time she's been able to express some frustration or outrage or sadness or confusion, whatever it is. And so letting her do that is a really, really constructive way for her to process things that she can't talk about right now.
Wow. That's so powerful.
Yeah.
She's
feeling safe with you guys, it sounds like, which is wonderful.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
And we know it's hard for children, but it's also hard for adults to process, because some things we're aware of that we've gone through. But I know people that we've worked with, and then even myself, when Jamie and I were doing a writing class, a very deep one about inner child work and all that, there actually started to come up some things of potential abuse I didn't even remember. You know, where, how, like, to the point of molestation by a clergyman. But it's more of a curiosity at this point. And it says, how do we discover that? Or do we even have to? How do we do truth from fiction? Because you've heard about the people when they're trying to recall memories, there was that whole movement and then it got debunked of things that weren't happening and forcing people into believing things that didn't happen.
Right.
But also with real traumas we go through, is there a way, Amy, to try to separate the peas from the carrots to understand or even recall stuff that happened at a younger age, let alone, I know, the generation before, but even at certain younger age.
Tape off, I guess, with ourselves, with our children.
Just even almost like a little understanding, if it's there or not. Because you say, maybe something happened, maybe didn't. And you don't want to be crying wolf, but you also don't want to close to something that could have been.
Right, exactly. And I so appreciate your transparency, Jim. That is so powerful, because usually there is some sort of additional memory that's associated with it. It'll be kinesthetic. It can even be olfactory. There can be a smell associated with it, or a feeling, even if it's kind of a queasy feeling in your stomach. Any sort of sensory reaction that goes along with that memory is indicative that it did happen. Again, it's the body, you know, storing that memory and letting you know that it's there. I really believe that our souls kind of choose when we're ready to recall those things.
Interesting.
In my own history, I had memory sort of it, but it was like a silent film. And it was just like 1 or 2 second clips.
Yeah.
And then the clips started to become longer. And this was when I was 25 and coming out of a battle with anorexia, where I really almost lost my life and decided that I was going to live. And it was literally like a tidal wave of these clips of memories coming in. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I thought I had remembered all, because I had other traumas happen in my life. And suddenly this was the earliest memory. So I'm not surprised, you know, when you are doing that inner child work, you're in a marriage where you're feeling safe and loved, and there's, you know, unconditional acceptance, and you're getting more intimate. The more a couple becomes intimate emotionally and in all ways, you know, our souls are going to have to open up. But until we have that intimacy with a partner, we probably never experience that level of safety with anybody else in our lives, no matter how wonderful they were. You know, the marriage, of course, is the most intimate relationship. So it makes sense that that would come up then. And I think we really do know if they're forced, you know, if somebody was suggesting to you that, you know, you would experience this kind of abuse, if they were, you know, saying, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure that you haven't experienced this? You know, that.
Nothing like that. Nothing. Yeah. There was no prompting. In fact, there was the, I don't know what the opposite of prompting is. Just saying, wait a minute. What is this? Or what is this? Almost intuition, as you said. It's almost like you said, a tiny
clip. Silent film.
It's more, and I've never heard anyone directly say that, Amy, of working through trauma can come through the strength of a marriage, but that makes so much sense, because I think Jamie and I have done that for each other.
Of course.
Because it's not easy work, as I'm sure you know.
No, it's not, and I can see that just in the way you are with each other, you know, the way you look at each other. I can see that in a couple. There's so much is communicated with the eye gaze, when you look at each other, you know, your comfort together, your posture is clearly that you two are really, really safe and in love with each other. Of course, it doesn't mean it's perfect. That's also what makes it such a beautiful and safe marriage, because you're allowed to be imperfect with each other too.
Yeah, that's good. Well, we agree. We have a saying for 18 summers. We say the worst saying that's ever happened to family life is that saying, the perfect family, because 10 years of work we've done, we haven't found one perfect family, and we're certainly not it either. And I don't think we ever will. And we're really okay with that now.
Yes.
And gosh, I could do this all day long. Do you have, I wanted to add one, well, I guess I have two more questions. Are you good on time?
You're doing absolutely. Okay? Yeah.
Right, thank you. Two things I was wondering. One, how does our own trauma affect our children? You know, I'm sure there's a million ways that we can think of how that you have that our trauma can affect our children. But is there something that, you know, not addressing our trauma or ignoring our trauma, or just, I mean, anything that brings up in you for me to say, how does our trauma affect further generations and affect our children? What do you have to speak to on that?
Right. And that's such a great question, Jamie. The two are really intertwined. There's the impact that you really can't control, that's a genetic impact. For your biological children, you know, trauma that happened for you or trauma that happened in your ancestral line is imprinted on your DNA. And so children of parents who've had trauma will experience a variation in their genetic makeup. If you don't deal with the trauma, then your unhealed trauma affects the way that they're set up to experience life. For instance, they found that children of moms who have not dealt with their trauma have larger cortisol receptors. And so they're going to experience a higher degree of anxiety and fight or flight simply by the way they're genetically set up. And because their mom didn't learn how to deal with it. When a mother and father do trauma healing work, it not only models it for the child, but for any children that you're about to have, it's going to set them up better genetically because they're going to have that healing. You know, I will tell people that when we talk about the trauma and how it impacts the brain, there are lesions in the brain that you can see, and there are fissures in the brain that are evident when there's been significant trauma. Wow. And when you do therapeutic work, and I also believe in functional medicine and the healing of that and supplements, we literally heal the brain and those fissures heal over. So you see scars, and that's why I tell people, you know, that scarred brain is so beautiful because that's your journey. That shows the map of your life and the healing that you've done. But it's also why it's such hard work, because you're literally healing your brain and working to change that. And so, you know, they did an experiment at Emory University with mice and with cherry blossoms. And they introduced the smell of cherry blossoms to these mice, and they'd be drawn to it. But every time they went towards the scent, they would get an electric shock. While their babies, all the babies had to do was sniff the cherry blossom scent, and they would flinch as if they'd been shocked, because they had gotten a genetic imprint that cherry blossoms meant you're going to experience pain.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's that deep component for it. And then every time you get triggered, but you don't have a way of resolving it, your child's going to feel that. And so when I hear about a lot of conflict in families and people don't understand what's going on or how to deal with it, and it doesn't seem to make sense, and of course the children are going to feel that because they're so tied to you and just the atmosphere of your home and where you're headed as a family.
Wow.
That's incredible.
So what would be step one to helping your kids? Because I know there's very few people I don't know that didn't have some degree. Obviously, there's a spectrum, but everyone yes. wants their kids to have better than they did. Yes. So what would you say if people are listening to us saying, well, what's the first step? What can I do to support my children to give them better than me, not only...
Starting today, even if you've not done as best as, you know, we always do as good as you can until you know better. So now
right.
we
know. Well, exactly. And I think the most important thing you can do is do your own trauma work. You know, work with somebody who is experienced with trauma. A lot of people say they are, but everybody needs to interview their therapist or their coach, whoever they're choosing to work with. If that isn't any motivator, I'm not sure what would be, but the value of that is just inexpressible because it's going to change how the child not only views you as their parent, but also the depth of love you have for them. And it gives them permission to deal with what's going on inside of them. And it allows you to then be your best self in your family when you're setting up your mission and your vision statement. When you're doing some of that work together, you don't have those obstacles standing in the way. You know, just taking that first step, which is the hardest, because a lot of people say, well, it's not affecting me that much, or it's not that big a deal. It's not like I went through this sort of trauma. We always minimize ours. Oh, it really wasn't that big of an issue. Nobody thinks their trauma is. The person who's been in the most heinous, abusive situation thinks about the person who's had it worse for them. And so it's just important to appreciate the seriousness and significance of your experience and to acknowledge that. There are some wonderful podcasts out there. I'm a huge fan of podcasts. And so listening to podcasts about trauma, the book that I mentioned, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score, is a wonderful introduction to that. And there's a book that's faith-based that talks about trauma in marriages and trauma in families, and it's called Soul Healing Love. And then the version for families is called The Family Who Heals. And that was written by good friends of mine, Dr. Bev and Tom Rogers, both of whom have had significant trauma. And they talk about their own journey early in their marriage and then throughout their marriage and healing that and for their family, which it's really, really remarkable. So hopefully those are some helpful places to start.
Very helpful.
Wonderful resources. Thank you.
Yeah.
With the social climate right now and these, you know, sad and terrible things that we're seeing happen in the world when we're even having to address which lives matter, I think that, you know, I'm just wondering how your work and the things that you know, I mean, are we dealing with just what we're seeing, or can you tell me about those things that have come before this generational, you know, trauma that you speak of? Tell me how that affects what's happening today.
Right, exactly. You know, what we're seeing is evidence of the genetic imprinting that we talked about before. I mean, not only are we dealing with the anger and outrage of what's currently going on, which is just, it is inexplicably tragic. You know, it is heinous and inhumane, all of the things for saying it is. And the outrage is not only about this generation and about that person's experience, but all of the centuries before that have gone on. And as I mentioned, Dr. Daniel Amen has a great resource to help people understand the level of rage is not just about what happened over the weekend. It's not just what happened in that person's lifetime individually, but it's about the generations before and the rage that is built up over all of these decades and centuries that's fueling what we're seeing. And so people's brains are literally set up to feel an increased amount of rage based on their family experience, regardless of race or culture. That's just how we're built. And because it hasn't been addressed adequately, we're dealing with the fallout of that. And so it's really important, I think, to appreciate the fact that it isn't just in theory, it isn't just in a nicely written poem that we're dealing with this for centuries. It literally is playing out in the DNA map for that person.
Wow. And this is what we would see in any situation as, you know, layer upon layer upon layer of generations of oppression or generations of that, you know, if it never heals, if you're never seeing the work done, like you said, if you're not healing yourself before you have these children, let them see you heal it even after they're here is what I was hearing.
Absolutely.
Is my huge, lots of things that I've gathered from this, but just really, if you haven't already done the work, start now so they can see it. You know, maybe the imprint's already there. Maybe there's already something a little bit different in the brain, but it heals and you can be that example and that leader. And I do think too, that as we heal ourselves and then our future generations, there's something to be said even about generations that came before us seeing us heal. Yes. You know, is that, I wonder, you know, is there anything that proves that, you know, saying, wow, if you heal yourself somehow, even your parents and your grandparents, you know, there's some part that it just kind of fixes the flow.
Yes. Yeah. I have to believe that on some level, you know, there's some appreciation for how we're changing the legacy, you know, and whether for your biological children or for those that you've brought into your family, you're healing generations. And that's part of why it's so hard and also part of why it's so worth it.
Yeah. Ask your famous.
Well, we'd love to know our famous ending question, 75-year-old self. So looking many years down the road, I've always tried to call my older, wiser self when you're going through a situation or an event. You know, what do you think your older, wiser self, your 75-year-old self would say to you about today? With everything that's going on around, like, what do you think the advice of your 75-year-old self would give right now?
Yeah, and I've been thinking about this since Jamie, you wrote me the question, because I love the question. I ask it of my clients so many times, and so I'm not often asked to answer it. I think before this weekend, I really thought about my grandmother, who was just about the youngest 96-year-old who I knew, and I think about what she would say, because she and I were really kindred spirits, and no matter what she faced, she lost a child in infancy. She had been through wars. She had lost siblings and parents and had been through the Great Depression. But she always, always found the humor in things and found the value of that, you know. And before this weekend, I know that she would be reminding me of that. No matter how dark the days, there's always something that, you know, that laughter can heal within our hearts. But she also would say that, you know, nothing is ever wasted. And even the pain that we're going through right now as a world and as a nation especially, it doesn't have to be wasted. And there wasn't any experience that she faced that she didn't overcome. And part of that was being so resilient, because she knew that she could put it to some sort of use and use it to make her stronger. And so that's probably what I would be reminding myself of today. You know, after the darkness of this passes, I think it's also important to remember the humor, but in the midst of the darkness, to just remind yourself that this will be used. This can be an opportunity to learn and grow and get stronger and better if we will perceive it that way.
I love that. Nothing is ever wasted. All for a Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for your wisdom and your time. And now, can you tell our 18 Summers Tribe where we can get more of your wisdom? How can we follow you? Where can we find you?
Absolutely. I'm on Instagram newly, so that is growing, and it's just at my very long name, Amy Van Slambrook. I'm also on Facebook under the same name, and LinkedIn, of course, all of those, and on my website, amyvanslambrook.com. So any of those places is great. Please feel free to DM me. You can email me from my website. I would love to help and hear from anybody.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much for your time today. Yeah,
incredible
this
wisdom.
Beautiful. I mean, I could do this day long.
I know this has been so great. It's been so wonderful. And I'm just honored to be able to contribute anytime to your community because you are doing work that is literally going to be changing legacies. And I'm not underestimating it. It's really incredible.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. We appreciate it.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.